Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your questions on the line this evening is independent analyst Jimmy Moyaha. You can send us those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@businessdaytv using .co.za, or tweet us at businessdaytv using the hashtag stockwatch. We'll start off with insights from Bloomberg. It's the day after the Fed's announced that it will scale back on its bond buying program later this month, holding interest rates steady, and the markets are digesting the news. Here's a quick take from Chief Investment Officer of ADS Investment Solutions on what he'd made of the Fed's decision.
What really struck me during that conference call post the decision was the number of times the Fed acknowledged that there is higher inflation and that it may be something they have to deal with. So our opinion on that is that I think the chance of the Fed making a policy mistake now is higher than it was before this meeting. I think the Fed has been goaded by the market to go ahead and raise rates, and their patience is really being tested right now.
Good evening, Jimmy. Oh, I see Cronbridge Coco has decided to join us as well. Hello, Chris. How are you this evening?
How are you
doing? I'm good.
Good, thanks. And yourself?
No, awesome. I'll start with you, Jimmy. So everyone was waiting for the big news from the Fed last night. Yes, they're going to be taking the punch bowl away, you know, from the party, but slowly, obviously. But the key, I think, catalyst here was the fact that they're still holding the interest rate steady. They're not going to be doing much there. What did you make of the news?
So, I mean, the news is something that we've been sort of expecting for a while. The Fed Chair, Jerome Powell, sort of been preparing the markets for this since as early as April of this year. So we have sort of been anticipating that this will happen. I think what the chairman of ADS Investment said around the potential for the Fed making mistakes is the only thing I would sort of differ with there. And that's largely because this is... I wouldn't call it a mistake. I mean, the economics, the Fed, everybody responsible for financial markets and global markets are at best making educated guesses or educated estimates based on information they have on hand. And that information is dynamic, as with inflation. And as yes. those changes come out from an inflationary perspective, the Fed is allowed to change their view. It's not as the view that they adopted initially is the view they must carry through. And again, I mean, this is largely off the back of what Fed Chair Powell said. He said that he was around for the financial crisis of 08. He wanted to do things differently. And he had said from the onset that tapering will not necessarily be followed by interest rates, and that there are certain factors that will be looked at. So yes, the inflationary conversation has changed and shifted slightly, but I don't think the Fed was mistaken in their policy. I think they've just had to readjust their policy and redirect their view.
Yeah, no, I like your comments, Jimmy, around giving them wiggle room to actually be malleable and be reactive to what's actually is happening currently in the markets, rather than, you know, adopting a basically like, you know, steadfast and immovable type of stance, where if, you know, there's things that come from the sidelines, they actually just, you know, still stick with the old view, even though it doesn't work anymore. So, Chris, what did you make of the Fed's announcement last night? Does it still do you still get excited by these type of announcements after so many years in the market?
Good grief. I never get excited by pronouncements from the Fed. Yes. And as Jimmy said, look, I think it was largely expected. And, you know, today watching Andrew Bailey at the Bank of England coming out with a similar type of thing. Although we thought that we were going to get a rate increase from the Bank of England, we actually didn't. They've kept rates steady. But I think both Powell and the Bank of England, and Bailey, what's becoming clear is that growth is now more important. I think they're more concerned about that than they are about inflation. You know, Powell's still sticking to this narrative about inflation being transitory. Well, yeah, go and tell that to all the people who are buying in the supermarkets, and tell that to the people who are paying massive amounts of increases for their energy. It's nonsense. Of course, it's not transitory. There's large elements of it are, yes, and large parts of it will go away. However, I think there are certain structural parts of it that are going to stay with us for a while. And I think that's being missed by Powell and the Bank of England and others and Christine Lagarde as well. So look, I think, unfortunately, I think growth is starting to taper off in a number of developed countries. Oh. And that's very, very worrying. You know, if you look at what the Bank of England said today, their growth rates are coming off quite significantly. So I think they're refraining from increasing rates, not necessarily because of the inflationary impact, but because of the perceived damage it would do to growth.
Yeah, and I mean, in Europe specifically, we've seen a resurgence in the, you know, COVID numbers, for example. Same with Southeast Asia, and that could be, you know, one of the factors that are contributing to growth specifically, as people are going back inside, mask mandates are back on the table again, and you know, trickles down all the way to the bottom. But let's jump straight into our questions. The reason why we're really here. This one is from our SMS line. Says Supergroup seems to be on a downtrend. Any comments? Do we have any comments here, Jimmy? Do you follow Supergroup?
I haven't taken a look at the stock, but I mean, if we look at some of the performances of sector stocks in this time, I mean, you've seen a lot of performance has been not what it's been, what's been expected or what's been anticipated. So you look at things around your revenue numbers coming in positive, but yet you're not seeing that translate through to your increase in your share price, and that could be largely due to a number of factors. So that could be due to things like supply chain constraints,
yes,
things like increase in input costs, raw material costs, and basically your inability to curb your costs and keep those under control because of factors that may be beyond your control. So while I haven't looked at Supergroup, I mean, I'm sure some of those factors may have translated into their company as well.
And it's always been harder to pass these costs down if they, you know, all of a sudden from nowhere start increasing on you as a supplier like Supergroup. They are. So Chris, we have another question from Graham Crowitz. He says, what's the panel's view on City Lodge?
One of my favorite stocks. Okay.
Yes.
Look, it's very, very simple. Provided we don't have a return to any kind of even remotely strict lockdown over the next few months, particularly over the holiday season. You know, we're starting to get foreign tourists coming back in.
Yeah.
The mix at City Lodge, like Tsugo Sun, like all the hotel groups, has definitely changed. You're going to struggle to get that corporate business to coming back with a vengeance, if ever. I think, you know, what we're doing right now, talking on Zoom, talking on Teams and stuff like that, I think in many ways is actually going to take the place of a lot of corporate meetings in future. And that may be a permanent feature. But City Lodge has been very clever, and they have substituted a lot of that corporate business with vastly increased leisure business. And that now that the UK's South Africa is off the UK's treasure red list,
yes,
you know, we're starting to get British tourists coming back here. That coupled with the likelihood of a good tourist season, I think will stand City Lodge in very, very good stead. You know, there's a lot of stale bulls around as far as the share price is concerned. It's struggling desperately to get through this kind of R5.50 mark.
Yes.
I think once it gets to that level, then I think it's A for away. You know, a lot of people say to me, you know, this thing, you can't use net asset value as a gauge. I think you actually can, because in the worst case scenario, if you're having to repurpose your assets, you can do that quite easily. You can actually repurpose these lodges and turn them into residential accommodation if,
yes,
the worst situation actually materializes.
Yes.
So net asset value around about R11.80, current share price half of that, to me it's a no-brainer.
Yes, and obviously you could remove some of that as cost of actually refurbishing them and repurposing them to what you want to use them for. This question comes from Russell, who's saying he's actually impressed by MTN's numbers today, 45% margin. He forgot how lucrative the business is. And admirably, he's actually, you know, survived regulatory pressures from many different countries while maintaining good liquidity levels, paying down debt, etc., etc. The question is, can the existing retail SL shareholder partake in MTN Nigeria book build? once the institutional investors have had their feel. I don't think you can do that. Jimmy, can you front run institutional investors and be part of a book build?
To the best of my knowledge, it becomes very difficult for retail investors to do that, if possible at all. I do think, though, that with the announcement of MTN's plans to go public with MTN Nigeria, I mean, they said they're looking to sell about a 3.7 billion rand stake in their Nigeria operations. I think that presents itself with a unique opportunity for the MTN group. Like we said, they are reducing their
debt
at the moment,
yep.
And they are refinancing their businesses and shifting a lot of their structures. They did also mention they're looking to shift towards cloud-based solutions through Microsoft and Google. So I think the positioning of MTN lends itself to a retail investor being able to participate at a retail level within the share price. I mean, the share price has done some 138-odd% this year alone. So I think you don't necessarily need to go after the
specific Nigeria,
going on, yeah. In Nigeria specifically, yeah. To benefit from it. If you are able to, then yes, of course, that's always a plus side, but retail investors shouldn't be deterred by the fact that they can't get in on one particular corporate action at this stage.
Yeah. Let's jump to our next question, which is Mohammed. He's asking the panel's view for, you know, a one-year period on Vodacom. Do we have comments on Vodacom? I mean, we've seen MTN numbers. Jimmy has said something very nice about MTN as well. Chris, do you have comments or insights?
Look, you don't have the excitement baked into Vodacom that you do in MTN because you don't have the geographical reach that the MTN's got. And, I mean, look, MTN has really come back with a vengeance, as you rightly say, Bright. I mean, it was looking out for the count a few years ago when it was getting hit with these notorious, idiotic fines from Nigeria. But it's learned to live with them, and you know, it's quite incredible how it's actually adapted to this sort of thing. Vodacom, it's a really great, solid operator, but I don't think you're going to have anything like the same degree of excitement out of Vodacom as you potentially will have out of MTN.
Okay. One more before we go into the break. What's the panel's views on Mondi? Mondi has actually enjoyed quite a lot of returns as the type of business that it is. So where do you see Mondi go from here? Jimmy?
So, I mean, from the operational standpoint, I like the way that Mondi's been able to sort of adapt to some of its challenges. But again, the main thing that is going to affect companies like Mondi and a lot of the other companies that are major supply type companies is your constraints at the moment on resources, your constraints on being able to get your product into the right hands, into the consumer's hands, and as well as get it sort of realize the revenues from the inventories that you're creating. I mean, we saw that a company like Truworths also reported results, and they cited that one of their major concerns was low inventory levels as a result of supply chain constraints. We've seen this as an ongoing theme, not just in South African companies, but globally, in international companies. And as your supply chain is affected, it's not only affected from a consumption perspective, but from those producers as well. Yes. So if your company like Mondi that is sitting there and heavy into production from that perspective, that side of your business is going to take a knock. We've seen companies also diversify their streams of income and revenue generation in recent times. Some companies have sort of acquired different divisions. They've diversified into sort of different areas of production. Regardless of what industry you look at, I mean, you can look at Sibanye in the mining space, you can look at Mr. Price in the retail space, but companies everywhere have sort of diversified so that you're less reliant on one source of income from a revenue-generating perspective, and thus looking to see if you can offset any interim supply chain restrictions or constraints that might affect your business.
Here's some more content from Bloomberg with the CEO of Credit Suisse detailing the Swiss bank's third quarter results. Let's have a look.
I think we had very solid results. So if you look at our reported net reported pre-tax income, it was up 25% and also adjusted pre-tax income up in a similar amount. The reported pre-tax income, as you said, also had some impairments, but it also had some other areas legal provisions were part of that, those impairments, but also another impairment in asset management. If you look at net new assets, very solid, over 6 billion of net new assets, and very strong capital, 14.4% CET1 ratio. So I think overall very solid results. Investment bank was up 9% in terms of revenues. Switzerland, very strong performance, up 25%. So
feeling
I think overall,
okay?
I think it was a very solid result in circumstances which were not easy.
Jimmy, those are very nice comments, obviously highlighting their results, but they just can't seem to shake off a scandal after another scandal. I mean, Archegos 2021 has been terrible for these guys, but especially these guys specifically, because other banks seem to have moved on from that. These guys are still struggling from that. So what did you make of the numbers?
Yeah, no, I mean, for the CEO is the CEO for a reason. He's going to give you the positives and sort of brush over some of the things that they don't really want you to see. I mean, one of the questions that was put to him in that interview was the likely impact of these impairments
yes.
in their reporting. And I think what he neglected to mention, and I feel this is a bit of a significant number, is that in Q4, they're expecting another 1.6 billion Swiss franc impairment from a acquisition that they acquired in the year 2000. So it's a list of things that's going on. I mean, when I see Credit Suisse at the moment, I see reminiscence of Steinhoff. And I say that because while Credit Suisse is shaking off scandals the same way Steinhoff was shaking off scandals, the asset portfolio and the core assets of the business are still very good core assets. This is what we've said about Steinhoff as well. You look at Pepco, still a very good core asset for them to have, still very good for revenue generation, and has been one of the most profitable in the retail space. Credit Suisse, of course, because it's Swiss-backed, has that level of inherent trust being from Switzerland, but also that inherent level of secrecy to a certain extent. And I think that's been played out in terms of the scandals. You look at the litigation costs that we are expecting them to, I mean, they reported about 564 million Swiss franc of litigation costs, of which 214 million of that was associated with the fraudulent loan that was around the Mozambique scandal that they had a little while back. So while the CEO has provided a lot of positive features as a result of the business's underlying core assets, things like their net new assets being up some six billion Swiss franc. Those numbers are very impressive, but the scandals are going to be a concern. And the scandals will continue to be a concern until they get through them and they resolve all of those issues.
Yeah, Jimmy, you call it, secrecy or trust. I call it dodginess. But anyways, Chris, your comments around Credit Suisse?
You know, it's interesting. You intuitively think of Swiss banking as being paragon of virtue and nothing can go wrong. But, you know, I can think of in the late 90s, you had that massive derivative scandal that went on that resulted in the amalgamation of, what, three of the big banks in Switzerland. And there have been many since then. And now you've got this series of scandals at Credit Suisse. I think what's going to have to happen ultimately is the Swiss banking authorities are going to have to do what has hitherto been the unthinkable. In other words, come down, actually, have massive new regulation on the Swiss banking institutions.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it really is, as you rightly say, Bright, it's I mean, these schmuckles they're just too many of them. And they're just taking the mickey, basically.
Yeah, no, it's a problem. Let's jump to our questions. These are coming from the Twitter feed. It's Johan de Brain who's asking, well, he's saying, please do braid for me. This share has been giving me a headache. So, Jimmy, you spoke about Steinhoff earlier. Braid is not far off from that in terms of returns. So what does an individual that owns a bit of Braid do at this moment in time?
So I think if you're looking at your portfolio and you're looking to see sort of where your best returns are going to come from, if you're holding an asset like Braid and you still inherently believe in the underlying intrinsic value that you might be able to unlock from there, you might be better off sitting with your holdings and just looking to diversify into other sectors. I mean, Chris spoke earlier about City Lodge. I personally have been in City Lodge, and the returns that you're going to get on a stock like City Lodge in this time when leisure stocks are going up might offset any interim losses you might get on Brait, assuming you want to hold it from a long-term perspective. However, if you're looking to sort of cut your losses, streamline your portfolio, adjust your or rebalance your portfolio into sectors that are going to be more profitable, you might want to then swap out a Brait for a financial stock or a financial services sector stock like a Sanlam, like an MTN Group, something that has got a bit of a different approach to whatever your portfolio has. I think it's a bit difficult to say whether you should outright get rid of the stock at this stage, given that you, again, everybody's portfolio is built slightly differently, and you might find that Brait offers you a bit of exposure to certain sectors, whereas you might not if you have some technology stocks or other stocks within your portfolio.
Yes, this is actually a big brain question for you, Chris, from Senabile Mazubane. She's asking, well, with all these global supply chain shortages that we are facing, what stocks should one short?
That is a tough one. What should you short? That's really caught me on the hop. I can't think of one offhand. What should you short?
While you ponder on that, let's have Jimmy. Jimmy, do you have anything off the cuff that you think maybe would worth a short here because of these supply chain issues?
Do you know what? Oddly enough, I would probably, if I had to wager just a best guess at this stage, I'd probably look at something like a Truworths or a retail consumer-based company in the clothing space. And that's
so like a fast fashion
loosely,
counter based in South Africa.
Yeah, that's loosely off the basis of the fact that if your supply chain constraints continue, you're going to have companies like that are unable to get new stock in for, especially stock that is reliant on seasonality.
Season, yes.
So fashion trends and that sort of thing. So that's going to be difficult to get into your stores if you haven't switched to an online model. Now, you've seen guys like Truworths that have switched to an online model. So if you've got a retailer that isn't necessarily heavy in the online space and isn't able to sort of balance out that lack of foot traffic, you might be good to short a stock like that. But as Chris said, it's very difficult to pick out any one particular sector to short. I mean, miners are going through the roof at the moment with the shortage in resources. Financial sector stocks are going through the roof with the low interest rates.
Yeah.
A lot of sectors are performing really, really well. And it becomes very difficult to then sit down and say which sector is going to suffer. Chris mentioned earlier that if we go back into lockdown, your hospitality and leisure and retail sector might suffer in that respect. And I can agree with that 110%. I mean, I'm firmly of the view that Sohosan, Sun International, and City Lodge are going to go up. I'm holding all three of the stocks. But again, that's dependent on the lockdown regulations.
Endings,
so at this stage, it's very difficult to pick out an easy win to say, short the stock, it's coming down, and that sort of thing. We've also seen, if you look at U.S. markets, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, all equity markets are trading at all-time highs. So you could literally pick a random stock, get lucky on it if there's a market pullback, and say that that was a good short. But at the same time, because of the inflationary pressures that are happening around the world, you're starting to see that equity markets are a favorable return. They're providing a better return than your banks are providing because the interest rates are so historically low. So it's very difficult to pick a stock to short, but it's also very difficult at this stage to say go long on a Tesla when Tesla's trading at all-time highs.
Yes. Chris, have you gotten your thoughts around shorting?
No, just really to follow on from what Jimmy was saying, I think what we're seeing already is that many countries have established their own local supply chains to try and obviate what may happen in the future with China, for example. So if China starts another pandemic, it's going to cut back in its supplies. But that will not necessarily have the same impact on many countries if they have their own integrated supply chains onshore. So at that point in time, I think then, yes, that might be the time to start thinking about shorting some of these companies that have been doing incredibly well, some of the container companies, for example, but not right now. because the pressure is still on.
Okay.
And frankly, I think it will carry on for a while yet.
Yeah. I mean, the lead lag times there, they used to be around 3 weeks for fast fashion. But I mean, right now you're looking at 2 to 3 months. You know, in some worst case scenarios, individuals are saying, look, it could take 6 months to get your fashion clothing onshore, which is going to be a disaster if that's true. So I think I like what you gentlemen are saying there. But the moment of truth is here. Stock picks, gents. I'll start with you, Jimmy. What's your stock pick for the evening?
It's a bit of an out there stock. It's Marathon Digital Holdings. It's a US listed company. And it's largely off the back of a couple of things. I mean, one of the things that I really liked that Chris mentioned earlier when we were chatting about how the new age of things is going to be and how you can value a company like City Lodge on net asset value is a company like Marathon. Marathon at the moment is a mining company, so they mine crypto, they're involved in digital assets, they're involved in NFTs, they've created a digital asset marketplace, amongst other things. But what's interesting about Marathon is they're trying to be the biggest mining or crypto mining company in North America. They've invested heavily in mining. They're mining for themselves. They're mining for others. They've got top-class mining equipment and that sort of thing. And now the reason this becomes a riskier pick is because of the fact that you're looking at the crypto space. You're looking at Bitcoin. You're looking at markets that are currently very volatile. And so your price is going to be affected by the values of Bitcoin and the volatility associated with Bitcoin. But where Marathon excels...
Jimmy, sorry, I have to cut you there. We're running out of time. So, Chris, I have to take your stock pick. You choosing Marathon Digital. I thought you were going to say Marathon Oil, but okay. Chris, what's your pick?
Well, very predictable. I'm sticking with City Lodge.
Okay.
And I think for all the reasons that I mentioned earlier, we're getting close to their break-even. I think once we get to the holiday season, if we get to that break-even, which is round about 35 to 40%, by the way, it's very, very low in comparison to many other hotel operators. When that happens... Bang, you start making profits.
Okay, so you're betting on a turnaround story there at City Lodge. Gents, yeah. Thank you very much for coming to the show. Thanks to my guests, independent analyst Jimmy Moyaha and Chris Gilmore. We'll be back with more of your stock-related questions on Monday. Have a good evening.